trumpet, he will.
It's the Skinny on Sports Podcast with Aaron Cowan.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Wednesday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to the Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, the Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. We get into all kinds of different things today. Some NFL, but it's not going to be the playoffs. Mel Kiper came out with his first draft, mock draft. We can kind of look at that a little bit. Obviously, that's going to be something that we get to pick apart, gosh, middle of February until the end of April, probably, you know. That's kind of the one thing to talk about. But I think this year it's pretty fascinating. If you're Ryan Poles, and if for those that don't know who that was, and I'm not sure if I would have known if you'd have just said the name, that's the Bears GM. What would you do if you were him? What a unique situation that he's in. Having Justin Fields, but yet having the number one pick. Mel's got three quarterbacks in the top three. You really think that'll happen when we get there? How many of those quarterbacks you think will go in the first round? And then another OU guy that really wasn't very heralded throughout the season. Matter of fact, might have even gotten his job taken. He's in the first round. Strange how that's back-to-back years, a guy that nobody really thought was all that good around here might be a first-round pick in the NFL draft. And last year's kind of surprise was fantastic. In his job down at Jacksonville. Thunder, we're finally going to get to the Thunder at the halfway pole. By the way, you see what Portland's doing?
Yeah.
Portland's filing a protest over last night's game.
That was a weird ending with how that all went down. I didn't see it live, obviously, but
yeah, I didn't either.
Saw the highlights and weird ending. I don't know what to think of it.
So the Blazers contending that Chauncey Billups was clearly trying to call a timeout before the referee whistled a double dribble, which then Billups got tossed up one with 15 seconds left. Shea made one of two of the technical free throws. Then J-Dub knocked down the shot to win it. We'll see what happens there. But let's look at what's the realistic goal for the Thunder in the regular season as far as where they end up heading into the playoffs. How many all-stars will they have? And here's something that I didn't really think about until driving to Clinton yesterday, listening to the conversation. You know, it's possible. And right, if the all-star game is tomorrow, would happen.
Yeah.
Daigneault will be the coach.
Yeah, that's cool.
Anybody's even thought about that. You know what's funny? I was just seeing on ESPN, I pulled up the story about the protest. And the picture that's used, you know who's in the background?
Scotty Brooks.
Scotty Brooks.
Yeah. I forgot he was up there.
All right, so Daigneault could be the coach. And then I know that fans aren't going to feel like this once it gets there, but is any result for the Thunder in the actual playoffs this year just gravy? Making the playoffs, is that just gravy? And then you get to really start figuring out what's going on after that. What are the Bucks doing?
That was a little head-scratching moment.
Why in the world do they even hire Adrian Griffin in the first place? And then Doc Rivers?
Is that true?
It looks like it. I think it was kind of reported, but it hadn't been official. But if it's Doc Rivers, Doc's a conundrum. I'll tell you why with his career numbers. You want to know why nobody goes to OU games? And basketball. Because every time they do, the Sooners drop a turd in the punch bowl. Just like last night.
Oh, yeah.
Texas continues their mastery over Oklahoma and Porter Mosier. Now 0-5.
That's fireable.
For Mosier against Texas. I'll tell you what's even worse than that. Is his 1-4 record against Oklahoma State.
Yeah, that loss is coming.
Oh, boy, here we go. Negative Jared's in the house.
I told you at the beginning of the year.
Oklahoma State dropped their sixth straight in the conference last night to TCU, 74-69. Here's a question for you. I mean, I know everybody in the OU side of things is just negative as hell this morning, and rightfully so after getting blown out on their home floor by Texas again. How many losses will the Big 12 champ have? How many losses will the regular season Big 12 champion have? And then we got some high school hoops from last night. Talk about those results as well. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. That is 225-9698. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things or whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime right in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, a couple ways to stay in touch with the show. Log on to KADSAM.com or download the app. The app has it all. It's got radio. It's got the Penny News. Brand new addition to the Penny News. Hit the website last night at midnight, thepennynews.com. Pick up a free copy of the Penny News tonight in some locations. By tomorrow, you can check that out in the print edition. Big Elk and Paragon TV rolling toward the high school basketball playoffs. Just a few. How many regular season games you got?
Let me count them because we've had them.
Like four or five?
Cordell, then Hammond. Four. Okay. Cordell, Hammond, Burns Flat, Corn Bible.
So I was thinking just three or four for everybody.
Yeah, four more for us anyways. For most people, I think, around – well, for most – yeah, I mean, most people are playing Friday. Our game next is on Thursday.
I just happened to click Duke. And they've got five. Thursday, Friday, and then next week, and then the following, right at the first.
Yeah, third. I wonder how many have scheduled games on that Tuesday before district start.
What's the fifth? Is the fifth a Monday?
The fifth is a Monday.
See, I think
that might make sense. You can get a little earlier.
The Monday
there.
of that week. I think that's what Elk City has done. The next Monday down at Cash, them and Cash, which that could be wild because that could be twice in a week that happens.
Hey, you see the latest news? Now we're going off topic. You see the latest news of the high school coaching drama in the state of Oklahoma?
Elgin's coach quit?
Yeah.
I got a little intel about this last night, actually. Apparently, she got tired of one too many confrontations with parents. And just said, okay, I'm done.
Just kind of up in arms. Said, I guess she went very public with it, too.
Yeah.
On a Facebook post and said, the parent won.
I'm gone.
It's been a problem parent for, I guess the parent was on the previous coach, too. This was her first year.
Yeah,
so she wasn't even done with her first year.
See, that's, that used to be a yearly thing in the Western Conference, but Elgin's not on the schedule this year. I wonder it's because they went to 5A.
I think so.
And so they're out of the Western Conference, which is kind of weird. I mean, I guess, but maybe if it's just a 4A conference or whatever.
I heard about that last night. The coaches are saying enough.
You know who's next?
Who's next?
After the coaches? You know who else is probably ready to say enough? I'm not doing it anymore.
Well, we're already kind of seeing it with refs.
Refs, yeah.
We already have a massive ref shortage in this
state.
They
do a great job, though.
Sure they do.
I mean, they do a great job.
But and
speaking of refs, have you seen this? For the first time ever, there's going to be a dude who played in the Super Bowl is now going to be on the officiating crew in the Super Bowl.
Well, I think that would have happened before. That hasn't happened before.
Terry Killens played for the Titans against the Rams back in 2000 in that awesome Super Bowl that Kevin Dyson came up a half a yard short of immortality.
Right.
So he played, and now he's going to officiate the Super Bowl this year. It's pretty awesome.
I really would have thought that had happened before, but
anyhow,
cool.
Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah, I caught that this morning and
I heard about that last night. All right, speaking of last night, high school hoops, a couple of wins for Elk City over in Clinton. The girls, I think, was expected. Coach Jefferson, man, he's going through it right now, and I said it on the broadcast. A year like this, and maybe even he's got a young team, so hopefully he can get more participation You know, they only had six suited up last night. There was some other girls that were out there just in street clothes, so maybe injuries and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's just rough. There's no other way to put it. You know, he's doing all he can. His kids play hard. You know, they play really hard. Lillian Lime is a pretty good player. She's kind of the only scoring punch that they really have. So he's completely behind the eight ball, and it's a rough situation for him in his first year there taking over that girls program at Clinton. But he does get them to play hard. There's no doubt about that. And the ones that he does have, you can tell, taken to what he's trying to preach. So hopefully for them, that improves with the numbers. And then, you know, I know their seventh grade team won the tournament at Clinton or at Weatherford a couple weeks ago, so you know maybe he's got some in
something
the pipe
there, maybe.
Yeah, and I mean he's got too good a track record with what he's done with the Ravens in the summertime. He knows what he's doing. It's just a matter of building it from the ground up. And so, you know, they're in a rough spot. 0-17 now, I think, is their record, and really haven't been very competitive in very many of those games.
I mean, I caught him over at Clinton League on the weekends, coaching fourth graders. So,
sure.
He's
invested.
He has a kid there, I'm pretty sure, but he's totally invested with all those kids. Yeah.
No doubt about it. And you know what's crazy? And I just figured out, this is stupid that I didn't correlate this, but when I was looking at the roster last night, I was like, oh, I get it now.
Mm. What's that?
Two.
You just figured that out?
Yeah, I just figured that out. I've never seen it. Well, I've always just seen two. I've never seen, but then it had Eugene to Jefferson. I was like, oh.
Yeah,
I got it.
He's junior.
Well, I've never seen his first name be Eugene. That's the whole deal.
I thought everybody knew that.
No. I probably should have. It made made total sense. But anyhow, that's a side note. But the Elkettes started a little bit slow. I think it was, sometimes those teams have played before, and Elk City was a dominant win back in December. And I think it's just kind of human nature, or the starting five, they kind of have an idea their time is limited, right? Because of the way the game is going to go. Mm-hmm. You probably get a little bit selfish in the way that you play, because trying to get yours before you have to sit down type of thing.
Right, right.
I think the Elkettes maybe succumbed to that a little bit at the first of the game, but then as it moved on, I mean, Coach Hamm talked about it in his interview at halftime of the boys' game. With only six, Elk City's trying to incorporate some more press defensively, and that was a great time to do it because of only six players. You can wear down the opponent and all that kind of thing. Yeah. And so, they ran the press for a bunch of the first half, and then once the game kind of got out of hand, they fell back into the half court. But, the Elkettes did what they've been doing. Abby Brown has really been the catalyst after Christmas. She's averaging 17 a game. She had 16 last night in limited action, but everybody got involved. It was just one of those a good game for everybody out there. Then the boys, it was back and forth in the first half. Clinton made seven first half threes, and then their other bucket was an and one. So basically, in eight trips, they scored 24 points. Ronnie Redshin knocked down four threes in the first half, including a couple right at the end of the first half that turned a four-point deficit into a two-point Clinton lead at halftime. And then out of the halftime locker room, has to be the best half of basketball the Big Elks have played. I wasn't able to see the Seymour game, obviously, down at Childress, sure, because they were playing at the same time. Yeah. But Elk City outscored Clinton 15-2 in the third quarter, 31-9 in the second half. Clinton didn't make a basket from the field until like 3:20 left in the fourth quarter. They only made two in the entire second half. So they scored 9 points, two baskets for the four, and then they made five free throws. And then the Elks put up 31. It was a really, really good performance. Kudos. A guy that's not even going to really show up on the stat sheet was Logan Webb, back after missing the last four games. In the second half, he was the primary defender on Redshin, and man, he did not let him have the space that Redshin was able to get in the first half. Ronnie Redshin took a three, like at the buzzer in the third quarter, a long one contested just because he had to. He didn't take another shot. That's how good a defense everybody, but especially, I want to single out Logan Webb, because he was kind of the guy that every time Redshin looked like he might have some space, he was there to recover and have a hand in his face. And then offensively, the Elks kind of got moving up and down the floor a little bit, got some buckets at the rim, hit some threes. Alex Cupp had back-to-back threes toward the end of the third quarter that really kind of separated the game in the Elks' favor. So, you know, there's been plenty of negative around that program this year. They deserve mega kudos for the positive that was last night. You know, Bowie and Webb were back. Cole obviously makes a huge difference, and when he'll play like that, under control, the way he was, this team isn't bad. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, getting maybe that changes the course of what's happening, the direction of what's happening.
Yeah,
with those missing those games the way that it happened, and that's the under control. What you want to see. I mean, you love the fire, you love the passion, but you want it to be under control. And last night, Cole was fantastic in every way, shape, and form, and really kind of provided that what the Elks have been missing last week, to be quite honest, at the tournament in Washington, the scoring punch and the ability to get in the lane and create easier shots for everybody else. And that's what happened last night. So a good win, in my mind, the best half of basketball we've seen from the Elks.
Very good. Maybe some momentum, building some momentum. We'll see. I know Friday's going to be tough. I know. Yeah, Friday is Friday.
Friday homecoming. we've got to start questioning the opponents that are picked for homecoming
what
around
do you
here.
Do?
Carl Albert in football and Bethany in basketball. What are we?
Hunt's got
I kid, but good grief. Defending champion 4A girls number one, Bethany on the girls' side, and then Bethany on the boys' side's 13-3, ranked number 5 in class 4A. Man, you look at that schedule that the Bethany girls have played. You see 12-4 as a defending champ with everybody back, and you're like, oh, man, what's wrong with them? Well, let's see. They've lost in overtime by 2 to Northside High School over in Fort Smith, which is number 2 in 6A in Arkansas. They lost to 2-time defending state champ right here in the great state of Oklahoma, 6A number 1 Edmond North by 5 in the finals of the Mustang tournament. The biggest loss was a 17-point loss to St. John's College Prep. All they are is number 20 nationally in ESPN's poll. Then they lost by 4 to Morris Catholic, who happens to be number 8 in that ESPN national poll. So, Kaziah Loft and
probably
already
some future college stars on both this team.
Oh, there's future college stars maybe on Bethany.
Yeah.
Kaziah Loft and the junior point guard already committed to OU. Zaya Van, a senior wing, already committed to OU. Bryant Van is her dad. Remember him from OU basketball in years past. Yeah, they are for real. And, you know, last year they came out here, and at the time, the Elkettes scored more points on them than anybody had all year. I think they put up almost 50. I think the final score was like 85-51 or something like that. I mean, the Elkettes played a really good game against just an impossible opponent. So we'll see what happens. Just another building block for the young Elkette team. And then the Big Elks, they finally don't have that 6'11 dude, so that'll help as far as size goes. with Wooldridge not on the team this year. So, yeah, tough task. You're right. Trying to build some momentum toward the end of the regular season, into the playoffs.
Well, I mean, win or lose, it just depends how they play, right?
So yeah, that's
right.
So
they can just come out and maybe take some positives out of it and move forward. I mentioned that earlier. The schedule is favorable, especially for the girls, moving forward after this Bethany game. That maybe they can – even it, so that's going to be the key for Coach Hamm, is how do you spin – Friday into a positive, you know, how do you first, you know, the motivation of playing one of the top teams, not just state, but one of the top teams in the country, and then using that as momentum, you know, despite what happens. And I have no doubt he's a good coach, and he's got them girls playing pretty good.
Yeah, 7-11, realistically, that should be a 10-8, maybe 11-7 with some of the, you know, some of those losses, especially out in Childress, where I think if you replay the last 3 minutes of a few of those games, the Elkettes may win 3 of them. But that's just the growth that has to happen
right
throughout the season for a team starting 2 freshmen, 2 juniors, and a senior, and then a couple of the first players off the bench are sophomore and freshman. You know, that it's in.
Listen, if you're an Elkett fan, be excited for the future. Be very excited.
Yeah, this is what that's showing. What about you guys over in Canute? Fort Cobb came into town. I know Class B number 3 boys side.
Yeah, we'll start with the girls. They took on a Fort Cobb team that was feisty. I'm motivated. I mean, there's that word again. They came in with an 11-9 record. So, you know, a winning record. Coach Rogers kind of up and down season for them. But they came out a little inspired, played some good ball, and came out hot early in the first. And, again, Canute playing without Destiny Jackson, who's resting that ankle that she twisted up. And so Cambry Tabor gets her third start of the year. And it was slow go at start for the Canute Trojanettes. But once they got the 15-14 lead there at the end of the first quarter, they never relinquished the lead. But Fort Cobb never went away. It was just a two-point lead at half. Ultimately, Canute would win it 49-44, holding on there in the fourth quarter. And it took everybody everybody kind of had a slow start. If it wasn't for Emily Cantwell, the senior leader, doing things, she led the way with 20 points game high. She had 7 first quarter points, so kind of, you know, kept her team right there. If it wasn't for her, I mean, sometimes you just come out of the gate and you're just flat. Kendall Schuster came, you know, she's been great these past few games. Had a great tournament over in Weatherford. Only 2 first quarter points, only 4 first quarter or first half points. She did finish with 10. Everybody was having trouble rebounding and shooting, like I said, outside of Emily. So sometimes that happens. I mean, that's just that's life without Destiny Jackson, to be quite honest, to be frank about it. And they're learning that, and they've learned, you know, sometimes you're going to get easy wins like they did on Monday night against Duke, and sometimes you're going to get everybody's best shot at you, especially when they see an opportunity with somebody like Destiny on the bench not playing. Think, this is an opportunity for us. And Canute mentally survived that. So got their 18th win on the year. Now they'll rest tonight for the first time, it feels like, since, well, what was that, four games in 5 days? Is that what we said?
5 and 6.
5 and 6. Yeah, 5 games in 6 days. Going back to the tournament and rest on Sunday, played on Monday, played last night, rest today. They'll go to Cordell on Thursday. And I said this last night too, you never know when you're going to have to play a lot of games in that amount of time in the playoffs. Who knows what could happen? Weather, whatever. So I'm not against this scheduling because it's going to prepare them for the rigors of a playoff run. If things don't go well early, you're going to have to fight your way through it. So I'm okay with it. And the boys, I mean, you know what you're going to get out of Fort Cobb. Coach Hines has the machine rolling, always has. Every year you're going to get a really good team. This year is no different, ranked 3rd out of Class B. Cray Rogers for Fort Cobb. He's been a stud since he stepped foot in town, and that was no different. Game high, 26 points for him. And I think the difference was for Fort Cobb was Blaine Bellamy's 20 points. If they held him down, if Canute held him down, because it was 36-36 at one point in the third quarter. Canute took a 28-19 lead or a 28-19 deficit into the locker room at half. And like on Monday night, where they came out against Duke and had a great third quarter, outscoring Duke 18-8, they outscored Fort Cobb 18-15 in this case. At one point, tied it and made it a ball game going into the fourth quarter. But like good teams usually do, they find a way to win, find a way to pull away. That's what Fort Cobb did, outscoring Canute 27-21 in the fourth quarter and pulled away the win at 70-58. So it's a good effort from Canute. Just, you know, sometimes you're just going up against the better team. For Canute, Jackson Beck again led the way with 16 points. Luke Spitz, it took him a little bit to get going, but big reason why that third quarter was tied up was because of his effort. He had 13. 6 of his 13 came in the third quarter. He finally found his positioning down low, made 3 shots down there, and also got to the free throw line there in the fourth quarter to give his team a chance. But come up short, and they'll lose it. They'll drop to 15-6. They'll look to bounce back again on Thursday at Cordell. So, I mean, listen, it's people could, you know, the way Canute boys started the year on a roll. And now, you know, you lose. It's no shame in losing to Sentinel, Duke, and Fort Cobb.
Right.
Those are teams.
All top 5
all
teams.
Top 5
all top
teams.
3 teams.
Yes, and they're all expecting, if they don't make state, they're going to be disappointed, right? And if they don't even make a deep state run. So so if people are going, what's wrong with Canute? I don't think anything's wrong with Canute. I think that's just a tough stretch of the schedule. And it just so happened that Duke game was rescheduled from December, yeah. So all of a sudden it fits right between playing Sentinel, then of course they played Arapahoe between then, and then you know, Duke. And then the very next night, you're asked to play Fort Cobb. And they gave it their all. And I'm glad because some teams would go into a locker room losing at half. And twice they've come out of the locker room in the third quarter inspired. They just got to put four quarters of basketball together. And that's just the youthfulness of this team. There's four sophomores that start. They're still developing. They're still, you know, they're better than last year. There's still improvement that can be made, and I know it'll come. So I like their effort there in the third quarter. Just came up short. So they'll be fine.
So now that you've seen basically back-to-back-to-back, top three in Class B on the boys' side, do you say the order is right?
I think so. And that's no knock on anybody. I think that is right. I think Calumet is the best team out of Class B, followed by Duke, followed by Fort Cobb. And it's not, again, not a knock on anybody. All three of those teams, I wouldn't be surprised if they're playing on Saturday, but in any scenario. But Fort Cobb has Cray Rogers. If they didn't have him, they'd be a good team. But he's a guy. He's the engine in that Mustang.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon the pun. He's the dude. So, if he wasn't on that team, it might be by their standards kind of a rebuilding year for them. I do like what Coach Hines was doing last night. He played two freshmen, and he has some youth on this team.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See, I didn't see that at Hinton.
Yeah, he played Doyle Edge and Colton Baker.
Oh no, they played. Never mind. Those
yeah,
two played.
They came in, but he has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 freshmen, 6 freshmen on this roster. So what he's doing. He's getting them in, and then that thing's going to keep humming. But I think if we're asking who's the more complete team, I think it's Calumet. And then Duke has a lot of athletes on that team. So I think it's right. I think it's the right order. If you're asking me who the top three are, I think they got it right. Calumet, Duke, and then Fort Cobb.
Yeah, it wouldn't be any surprise if Fort Cobb has the best player on the floor each and every game with Rogers. You know, and that in Class B, it can always give you a chance. I think for Fort Cobb, he has to be the man each and every night, which a lot of times he is. But what you said is exactly right. Getting Bellamy to knock down some threes or whoever else, he can't do it all by himself. Mm-hmm. He can get pretty damn close. I mean, the guy is amazing. You don't realize how big and strong he is until you actually see him. And you know, you see like Luke and whoever else on a nightly basis, and then you see this dude that's running the entire show, and then he gets down in the paint, you're like, whoa, he's just as big as that fella. That's the part of it that you don't realize.
Yeah, and you think a guy at this level in high school, you think a guy that size could run the way he does couldn't slash the way he does or penetrate the way he does, and he absolutely can. And he creates so much by doing that. He'll kick it outside or he'll just keep it himself, get himself – he lived on the free throw line in the second half.
It's hard to keep him off of there because it's hard to keep him from where he's trying to go.
Yeah.
But maybe
Fort Cobb's turning a corner. You know, you'd seen him earlier in the season, and we agree that Cray Rogers is a guy, if you can – just contain him. I mean, even just slightly contain him or let him have his and make everyone else beat you, you got a shot at beating them. Well, maybe they've turned that corner where they're getting some guys to finally step up and hit some shots other than
yeah, poor
Craig
Bellamy.
Rogers.
He had a rough go of it in Hinton. It just didn't seem like he could hit a shot that week. And that comes and goes, right? Mm-hmm. It's just the timing of when I saw him. But I, from what I've heard or what have you, I think that probably – you know, it's Calumet, and then who's gonna challenge them? A little bit like Class A girls ceiling, and then who's gonna challenge to try to knock them off their pedestal? All right, that's good stuff. Some other scores from around the area: Arapahoe Butler beat Eric on the girls' side, 46-33. Cheyenne Raiden, they got another win. Fargo Gage Fort Supply, 41-19. Let's see, you had Hammond just pounded Hinton, 85-32. Merritt whipped up on Snyder. What was that final? 68-14. Leedy won a close one at Shattuck, 41-37. Those are kind of the scores from around the Paragon TV schools. On the boys' side, I think it was sweeps galore, wasn't it? For everybody, Arapahoe Butler beat Eric, 47-35. Canute was the only split if I remember right, the Cheyenne Raiden blasted Fargo Gage, Fort Supply, 66-26. He had Hammond come away with a win against Hinton, 64-49. Leedy was a close one for a long time, and then all of a sudden they just ran away from Shattuck at the end, 79-61. And then Merritt beat up on Snyder, 66-17. So those were your scores. You know, one that was of interest around the state and kind of a surprising, not that who won, but by the margin. Good grief. Did you see what Dale did at Millwood?
I saw that they played.
88-52.
The boys?
Yes.
Wow.
And that's a Dale team that was coming off a loss. On Saturday, Oklahoma Christian beat them in the finals of the county line tournament at Cashin. And then two-time defending state champ Millwood, 3A number two. And Dale maybe released a little bit of frustration on them. Goodness.
Yeah.
Newcastle beat Tuttle. That's on the road. Or no, that was at home. On the boys' side. Anyhow, just kind of looking around. Different high school stuff. We'll be back. College basketball, Thunder next.
Hey, Western Oklahoma schools, listen up. How would you like to win a $5,000 interactive smart display for your school? Thanks to Video Reality, an audio-video business in Oklahoma City, you could be awarded one. Here's how. From now through February 28th, anyone can text in one time per day through the entire promotion. The winner will be announced during our live coverage on the ParagonTV.com and Cool 94's coverage of the Saturday, March 2nd Class A and B Basketball Championships. Here's how to participate. The text line number is 580-225-9697. And in the text, simply type in the one word name of the school you choose to support. We are so proud to partner with Video Reality that through their gracious gift in this promotion, some lucky school will be awarded a $5,000 interactive smart display. Remember, send a text to 580-225-9697. Type in your school's name. It can only be one word. And send it. Limit is one vote per day per phone number. Good luck. Video Reality, your audio, video, and control experts.
The Skinny on Sports.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Welcome back. Skinny on Sports, 98.1 FM, the sports animal. Hanging out here on a Wednesday. College hoops last night. Jared, you want to know why nobody goes to OU games? It's because when they do, the Sooners lay an absolute egg. And sure enough, last night, great crowd inside the LNC. Such a great crowd that even Rodney Terry, the winebag Texas coach who complains about horns down, complimented the crowd inside the LNC for how raucous it was. And the Sooners proceed to get out-rebounded 40-24. They actually didn't just turn the ball over like they have been accustomed to against the good teams, but 4 of 19 from 3. Texas outscores them 43-27 in the second half to win 75-60. That now runs Porter Mosier's record to 0-5 against the Longhorns in his stint in Norman. And, man, speaking of momentum, like talking about with the Big Elks and Elkettes, a chance for Oklahoma this week to really kind of gain some of that. They were 3-2 in the conference, right behind the lead. You beat Texas on your home floor. You get Texas Tech on your home floor coming up Saturday. You win a couple of those games after a road win at Cincinnati, and all of a sudden you may be at the top of the nation's top conference. Instead, you leave all those people that came out to a 6 o'clock game with a sour taste in their mouth after getting blown out on your home floor by the Horns.
Yeah, obviously we weren't able to see it, but the stat lines you mentioned, you can't hit four threes and expect to win a game. That they kind of live and die by that three-point shot, and fortunately it started picking up for them on the road at Cincinnati, but couldn't protect home court. And it's disappointing with all those opportunities you mentioned. I don't know if fraud is the word to use. It's a little dramatic with a team like this, but I feel a little duped because I was starting to put a little hope into them, little faith into them, like this is maybe a team, and then that happens. I mean, I want to see a meaningful win. They lose to North Carolina. Is there a meaningful win? Cincinnati was okay on the road. You have to steal those games in this conference.
We're not going to give credit for beating Iowa State at home.
Are they good?
Iowa State's number 23 in the country. I mean, that's,
well, were they at the time they weren't.
It doesn't matter. They are now. I mean, this is the part of the OU basketball fan. I mean, think about the difference in the attitude and of OU football fan versus OU basketball fan, right? It takes all damn season to convince OU football fan that they're not a national title contender, no matter what their record is. You know what I'm saying? But then the OU basketball fan, do they have to beat Kansas and Houston back-to-back before anybody will go, you know what, this is a pretty good team? It seems like it, but I get it. Everything's built up last night. Texas hasn't been any great shakes.
No.
You know, they really probably should have been 1-4 in the conference, except for the, you know, Tyrese Hunter saving the day last Saturday against Baylor. But Texas is immensely talented. And I think that, you know who's going to be going through this same kind of thought process this year in the Big 12? It's going to be Houston fans. Because Houston fans are used to looking up and they're, what, 30-2 at the end of the regular season?
Yeah, yeah.
That ain't happening in this league.
Not in this league.
Not going to happen. And so that's why I bring up the question of how many losses do you think the regular season Big 12 champ is going to have at the end?
Last year was Kansas.
But they have six?
Yeah, they had.
That's what I'm saying.
It's survivable to lose a game like last night and still navigate. Of course, you have to have help. You have to have other teams around you lose, like Kansas, obviously. Kansas State's kind of on a heater right now. This year, though, like we said yesterday, this league is tougher. You mentioned Houston. I mentioned Cincinnati.
What about BYU?
BYU, yeah. Central Florida is capable. We've seen it already, pulling off the upset. So, I mean, that's realistic to see another a regular season champion have six losses this year. If maybe one more, you know, with those teams I mentioned, you added already to a tough conference some more good teams. It could be more.
It could, I mean, you know, that. But I think here's the problem that really puts a sour taste in the mouths of OU fans, and for good reason. You know, if that was Baylor, and you know Baylor's number 15 in the country, if that was Baylor that came in there last night and knocked off the Sooners in that, you know, in that environment, you kind of go, gah. But it was Texas. The only worst team that could have got that win against the Sooners last night that would be even a worse taste is OSU, just because OSU is 0-6. It had been their first conference win, right? And here's the deal. Coming up Saturday, you mentioned Kansas State. You know who else is 4-1 tied atop the league? Tech. At number 20, they're coming. You know, yeah, that's the thing about the Big 12. You're going to have chances over and over and over to kind of make up for some of these losses.
Yeah.
But you're also going to have chances to reel off three or four losses in a row because of the schedule.
Another note about last night, I think the fan base was incredibly disappointed today is because it felt like that was a Texas team they were better than. Because of Texas' struggles, ranked higher than Texas, and all that stuff, and it felt like this is an opportunity for us to get these guys for once, so for the first time in a few games. So that's another reason I kind of felt disappointed. I thought that was an opportunity for them to beat a team that's maybe not as good as they have been in the past, and put those horns down right in their face and really rub it in, and then they don't. They blew it, and they come out. I've seen words ill prepared. Put out there. I've seen soft put out there. I don't know about all that. It's just for me if the three-point shot, it's like blitz in football. You live by it, you die by it. If you only hitting four, is that right? Four?
Yeah, 4 of 19.
That's not gonna work.
Here's my problem. You know, you gotta beat the teams you're supposed to beat. Oklahoma's not better than Texas. Their record is, but if you look at those teams side by side, Texas is better than Oklahoma. They got better players. They do.
Yeah.
I mean, they just simply do. Now, Oklahoma, I think this is a little bit – it's almost a little bit like what happened on the football season. OU fans were cautiously optimistic football-wise until they beat Texas. And it was like, oh, my God, we're going to the playoff. Look out. That team really wasn't ever that good. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I think this OU team, the ranking, which – you know what? They've won the games and to deserve whatever that is. But I don't think if you really take a step back and go, you know, they were what, as high as number 9 at one point? I think they were 9 when they played North Carolina. They're not better than North Carolina, even though they were ranked higher.
Right.
I mean, they're not better. You know, and so maybe in a weird way, dropping in the polls down to 20 or 25 or whatever will kind of refocus. I mean, this team is much better than it has been. There's no doubt about that. It's more athletic. Mosier has kind of he's done what he needs to do to kind of get the thing starting to roll. And it's not going to be acceptable to go 0-for against Texas and 1-for against Oklahoma State. Even that wasn't acceptable for Kelvin against Eddie when Eddie had it rolling, and it's damn sure not acceptable when OSU is the worst team in the conference. I get it. Those rivalry numbers are poor, and he didn't really want to talk about it last night for good reason. And I think he was super disappointed in the outcome because he was out beating the drum to get everybody there. They all show up, and his team sucks again. This has happened a few times in his short tenure at Oklahoma where, you know, I think he even realized, man, that was a chance to really kind of get some people invested.
Yeah.
With the win over our biggest rival, and we blew it. So now I'm sure his first thought was, are we going to have a half-empty LNC coming up on Saturday against Tech? Maybe.
More than likely.
When you could have had filled to the rafters.
Yep.
You know, and those are – I think that's where, you know, his disappointment really at the end of the day. Losing a game is losing a game. Everyone's going to do it in this conference. But for the fickle nature of the OU basketball fan, I think, you know, we could easily see it going kind of reverting back instead of, hey, this team just beat Texas. They're toward the top of the best conference in the country. Why don't we? Let's do a little three-pack of games. We'll get Tech, and then we'll get, you know, whoever else is down. Oklahoma State is going to be one of those in the next three home games. But unfortunately, it didn't happen. And it's just kind of – it feels like that's – you know, this team is better and this team is higher ranked, but it does feel like this is where kind of each season is crescendoed to at times, to a chance to really kind of blow the roof off, and it just falls flat every single time. Oklahoma State, sixth straight in the Big 12. 0-6 in the cellar.
Not the sixth straight you want.
No, it's not. Six straight losses. You know, gosh, there's been a lot of conversation about will somebody buy out Boynton at the end of the year, $6.6 million buyout. I'm not the one writing the checks, so I get it. But I don't see how if you're an Oklahoma State alum, if you care at all about that basketball program, that they have to figure out a way to make a change, because I think there's real issues at a place that's used to having a lot of support for basketball, kind of fallen into where Oklahoma's been at times with just apathy, nobody caring whatsoever about OSU hoops. And as good a dude as Mike Boynton obviously is, and people like him, and he's a great recruiter. Look at the guys he's able to get on campus. But at some point, that has to transition into wins, and it just hasn't happened.
No, it's in a tough situation when it's a guy like Boynton, where he's a likable dude and a, like you said, good recruiter. But at the end of the day, if you're just not winning, it starts with the head coach, and there's going to have to be decisions made. And I wonder, you mentioned the lack of caring. Will anybody even care? Does somebody really want to contribute the money to buy him out? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
You know, that's I'm with you. I'm worried about that. If they're just going, just ride it out until his contract's done, we'll not renew it and find someone else. It's kind of a sad state of affairs for a great program like OSU basketball.
Well, and here's the other issue. What's coming into the Big 12 is as good or better than what's leaving, basketball-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Oklahoma, Texas leaving, but you got Arizona, Utah, Arizona State, blah, Colorado, blah. But still, those other two to join what's already here. I mean, this basketball conference is going nowhere. You can believe whatever you want about OU and Texas leaving football-wise and what's coming in replace of that. But in basketball.
The basketball card might have got better.
Basketball, not going anywhere. Yeah. With Arizona, I mean, Arizona's been as good as either OU or Texas. And
yeah, that's a good get joins for your conference.
Yeah, it's a for real conference. You know, that question.
But on the text line, though, when you know, we're talking about OU Texas, and said on the text line, so I'll put any money on OSU beating OU this year. I'm kind of on that same boat. It just feels like every time they play, no matter what type of teams they are, OSU always has the better of them.
Well, the proof is in the record. 0-5 against Texas, 1-4 against OSU so far for Mosier. Now, if they beat Oklahoma and Norman the first game between the two, that's going to cause some real hard feelings from OU basketball fans. Real hard feelings. You know, another text I got, you know, the reason why it hurts. How many teams do you think the Big 12 is going to get in?
Good question.
There's 8 in the top 25 this week.
I'd have to look at resumes, but I mean, safe. What do you think?
There's
9?
10, 11?
10, 11.
There's probably not a number that you could. I mean, who isn't going to make it? West Virginia and Oklahoma State.
Watch West Virginia go. I mean, they already got a signature win over Kansas.
Yeah, but they're 7-12.
But what if they go on a little run here? Yeah, they'd have to go on a big run to turn around, get above 500, make a deep conference tournament run. But I mean, that's what you're looking for in the resume is where are your style points at? Where are your wins at? But the conference is so good. I think the committee knows that, and they look at it and go, yeah, this team has this record, but 5 of those losses came in a conference where the conference champ or whatever. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. They're going to be hurt by the non-conference more than about anybody else because they weren't able to build some wins. Them in Oklahoma State. You know, yeah, you've got a win over a Texas team last night. They beat Kansas. I mean, that's the thing about those bubble teams and how that's going to go in conference. Everyone's going to have a chance at a bunch of resume-building wins because of how good the league is. I don't think 10 is out of the realm of possibility. I really don't. I mean, it's going to depend on what happens around the country as well. And, you know, like I said, Oklahoma at 3-3, without a ton of bad luck, they could be 3-6 with OSU coming to town on a 4-game losing streak in the league. When you go to you got Tech at home, you go to UCF, who has already beaten who they've beaten. Then you go to Kansas State, who's leading the conference, tied at the top of Tech. You know, it's not out of the realm of 4 straight losses, and then you're trying to dig your way back to 500 or close to it. I mean, I think for OU, with some of the wins they had in the non-conference, 8-10 in the league probably gets you in. You know,
it
really probably does. With how tough this league is. So, yeah, the Big 12 tournament, oh, my gosh, it's going to be a rock fight. It's almost one of those years like if you have aspirations, if you're a Houston or a Kansas or whoever that might be by then, if you have aspirations of making a deep run and like a Final Four run, you might just want to lose early in the Big 12 conference tournament so you don't have to put yourself through the rigors of what that's going to be. Every night, back to back to back? No, thank you. It'd be rough.
Yeah.
And whoever wins that's going to be bloodied. It might be one of those when we see the brackets, you go, are they ripe for an upset after having to go through that gauntlet?
Right.
And turn around and play? Yeah. Especially if they play Thursday. Like, ugh.
Yeah.
I don't know how much I like them. I'm trying to get through that. Yeah, it's an incredible basketball.
Or it toughens them up. And
oh, everybody's going to be.
When they get into the March Madness and the NCAA tournament, God, this is a lot easier than that Big 12 tournament.
Well, there's no doubt about that. Yeah, the Big 12 teams are going to be what they call battle-tested going into the NCAA tournament. All right, when we come back, we'll hit some Thunder stuff next. Skinny on Sports right here on the Sports Animal.
Hey, Western Oklahoma schools, listen up. How would you like to win a $5,000 interactive smart display for your school? Thanks to Video Reality, an audio-video business in Oklahoma City, you could be awarded one. Here's how. From now through February 28th, Anyone can text in one time per day through the entire promotion. The winner will be announced during our live coverage on the ParagonTV.com and Cool 94's coverage of the Saturday, March 2nd Class A and B Basketball Championships. Here's how to participate. The text line number is 580-225-9697. And in the text, simply type in the one word name of the school you choose to support. We are so proud to partner with Video Reality that through their gracious gift in this promotion, some lucky school will be awarded a $5,000 interactive smart display. Remember, send a text to 580-225-9697. Type in your school's name. It can only be one word. And send it. Limit is one vote per day per phone number. Good luck. Video Reality, your audio, video, and control experts.
The Skinny on Sports.
Welcome back. Skinny on Sports, 98.1 FM, the sports animal, hanging out here on a Wednesday. About to wrap up the Wednesday edition of the show. We were going to hit, we'll have to hit the Mel Kiper stuff tomorrow, but I can answer a text. AJ wanted to know who Mel Kiper had the Commanders taken at number two. Jaden Daniels, quarterback LSU. The top three were quarterbacks. It was Williams, Daniels, and then Drake May to the Patriots. So that was kind of where he had that. Just no trades, no, you know, it was just the kind of the skeleton version of his mock draft, just going down in order, given an idea of where he thought people were ranked. So we'll hit that tomorrow. There's a lot of things around Chicago that can really be interesting. Everything, you know, sometimes sometimes like the draft starts at 3 or 4, or, you know, whoever kind of has a quarterback doesn't need one. This one starts at the top.
Sure it does.
Numero
with
uno.
Who it is or who it could be, and then they said this before we went on, that conference or that division is suddenly tough.
Yeah.
So, do you
want to... But why is it tough?
Well, I mean, Detroit suddenly really good. Green Bay and Love is good. Minnesota, I mean, if they can get a quarterback.
Well.
And then there's Fields, who people like, but is he going to be that guy that... So, and then there's the all-generational guy, as they call him, Caleb Williams, all-generational guy. What if you're the guy? What if you decide to ride with Fields and then you pass on him and then here he comes at Washington and goes on a roll and you don't want to be the team that passed on him?
Yeah. Because a lot of people are still mad at them for what happened with Mahomes.
Yeah. And there's a lot of value there for Fields. I think they can get.
I've seen as much as maybe the 8th pick.
Yeah. There's still a lot of value. There's someone's going to want him.
You wonder if
you know where he'd fit. You know where he'd be really good, I think.
Where?
Atlanta.
Well, that's the 8th pick.
There you go.
That's it. Now, is Atlanta going to run the same stuff if they hire Belichick?
Yeah.
You know where he'd be great? Baltimore. But Baltimore already has Lamar Jackson.
They got a guy.
Yeah. But anyhow, yeah, they're intriguing what they want to do. Yeah. Think about if the Bears, if they had 1, 8, and 9, you could have your cake and eat it too. You could draft Caleb Williams as your franchise quarterback, hopeful, and then also have 2 top 10 picks to supplement around him. It's pretty good, stuff. Even though I'm a bigger Justin Fields fan than most, but boy, you're anybody in the world that's like a scout or a GM or the coach or whoever can get away with drafting Caleb and him being a bust because they could turn around and go, everybody else would have. But you get fired for drafting him and him turning into a superstar.
Yeah.
That's how you get fired.
And I know we'll have a ton of time to talk about this. I'm apprehensive on Daniels and even Drake May. I guess because I'm a little put out with we've been told that these guys like I don't know why I'm drawing blank on the quarterback's name at Carolina. Help me.
Bryce Young.
Young, thank you. And we saw what we got there.
Yeah,
and I'm told going in there he's one of the guys you got to have. Get him on your team and Carolina went and did it. They dumped Mayfield basically for him and there you go. So,
yeah, but I think this is going to be, for the first time in a while, a real conversation going into the draft. Is it his fault? And what Green Bay has done This is a copycat league. Mm-hmm. Will teams be willing to essentially burn a first-round pick for 2 or 3 years the way that Green Bay has done with Rodgers and now with Love? And it obviously worked with Rodgers, and it looks like it might have worked with Love. Are teams willing to do that? Because even in the later part of the first round, those picks are so valuable. And are you willing to burn one for two or to have somebody sit on the bench for a couple of years? Because I think it's impossible to know, but also I wonder how many of these quote-unquote bust quarterbacks busted because they went to a place where they had no chance. Who's to say Bryce Young? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Like, who's to say Bryce Young, if he was able to sit behind whoever for a couple of years, wouldn't step in and look like Jordan Love?
Right. Yeah.
You know,
maybe we're asking a lot of these guys to
Okay,
here's the keys.
That's why it's so special when you see what, like, Stroud did. It's so special when you see that. You know who else set? Mahomes. He didn't set for as long, but he sat.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
people forget that. Like me.
Well, I mean, I did until I was thinking about it just now. It's just hard to. You have to have either a better team around you than people realize, or you have to have that special whatever it is to go to those horrible situations and figure out a way to kind of take over and lead that team. And it's insanely difficult, but teams sure keep on trying it. You know, and it gets to the point where even when some of them succeed to a certain extent, it feels like a letdown because they're not, you know, not living up to their billing as where they got drafted. Like, I mean, look at Jared Goff. He's made a Super Bowl. He's now in the NFC title game with the Detroit Lions. And I think maybe until Sunday when he won that game, do people go, yeah, he was worthy of the number one pick? Meh. I think he has been.
Yeah.
But he's certainly not the slam dunk franchise quarterback type guy, right? Of what people think.
No. Yeah.
It's, you know, I mean, he's fantastic. I mean, nobody wants to hear this because of who was drafted after him with Josh Allen. I mean, at what point does Baker Mayfield get that same treatment? Does he have to make it to a title game? I mean, 2-2 in the playoffs, and he's been fantastic in the playoffs when he's gotten there. He won a playoff game in Cleveland, for God's sake. And he's 10 touchdowns to 3 picks, almost 300 yards a game in the playoffs. 2-2 as an underdog in all 4. I mean, he's not there maybe yet, but give him another couple of trips to the playoffs and a win or two, and you know, eventually into a title game. You can say all you want that and be right that Josh Allen was a better quarterback in the NFL. But when you look back at when the draft happened, think about it. I mean, that's no one considered Josh Allen the number one pick. No one even – people would have lost their minds if Cleveland would have taken Josh Allen. Now, it would have been great foresight by somebody. But even then, though, is Josh Allen Josh Allen at Cleveland? Is he?
Cleveland would have screwed it up.
Exactly. That's my point.
They would have screwed it up.
Carolina feels like a place where it doesn't matter who it is. They're going to screw it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's certain places that you – I mean, I can remember a bunch of people when Baker got drafted. Oh, God. Great. He's number one. Too bad it's Cleveland.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Because of the history of that franchise.
That's the pinnacle of his career right there is that draft night. Because you're going to Cleveland.
You're going to
quarterback's career just dies, basically.
Now, there's obviously some off-the-field stuff, and maybe getting paid the way he got paid has changed his demeanor. But just look at Deshaun. He was on that track of top 3 or 4 quarterback in the league at Houston. He was ahead 24-0 in a playoff game at Arrowhead and blew it. And now you don't even want to play. Where'd he go? Cleveland. It's hard to get the Cleveland stink off of you.
Yes.
It just kind of gets you, and there's nothing you can do about it. But anyway, That's the Mel Kiefer stuff. We can talk about Thunder. We're getting closer to those games. What do you think about this? What matchup do you want to see in the Super Bowl? As a rooting interest, and then as like X's and O's that would create the best game.
Okay.
Okay. That'd be a question for tomorrow.
Yeah.
Everybody on the text line as well. I think one team is going to be in it for about everybody rooting interest wise.
That will be in it?
That like it'll be in their mind. Like, oh, okay, if it's like the cool story, I want this team. Well, I think everybody's got the same team, right?
Pretty obvious. Yeah.
But I don't think they make the best game.
No, I think we know that one is.
All right, we'll be back. Everybody have a great Wednesday.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.